You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
By the start of the 1960s, a profound change had come over popular music. A change unquestionably for the worse as far as songwriters were concerned. The recording industry had become largely a branch of child welfare. The age group at which popular songs were aimed had dropped into single figures, with a resulting drop in sensitivity and intelligence. The studio system in Hollywood had been broken up by the advance of television. All these things meant that writers like Johnny Mercer, who had committed the arch sin of being over 40, found life much tougher. Not in the financial sense. Royalties were always there for creators of his quality. Not in the artistic sense either. Mercer in 1960 was what he'd always been. A genius. What had changed was the market. The opportunity to work was steadily shrinking. At which point, Johnny Mercer, by reacting as he always did to music that moved him, entered a new, brilliant, and deeply significant phase of his career. The last phase. And one which turned out to be the most dazzling Indian summer that the songwriting craft has known. He found his last great partner, Henry Mancini.
Hank Mancini had a tune, an instrumental called Joanna, and I thought it was so pretty, I called up his publisher, who was a friend of mine named Larry Shane. I said, you want a lyric for that tune? And I did write a lyric. Well, the song didn't mean much, but it must have meant something to Henry, because the next time he did a picture, he wanted to know if I'd write a song with him. And that turned out to be Breakfast at Tiffany's, with that great tune, Moon River.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. Old dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going. Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same. My huckleberry friend, Moon River and me.
Johnny and I go back a long time. The first real collaboration was on the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's. He was incredible to work with. You know, the original title of Moon River was Blue River. He found out that there were several other songs with that title, some by friends of his, so he changed it to Moon River. And, of course, the rewards of the songs I wrote with Johnny Mercer helped put my kids through college.
Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend, Moon River.
Mancini's appreciation of Mercer doesn't quite go into the trials and tribulations that turned up before the partnership was allowed to express itself. Later on, when the smoke had cleared and the Oscar statuette was safe on the mantelpiece, Mercer enjoyed looking back at the studio boobies and rubbing it in, as he did on the night in 1971 when New York honored him with a one-man show.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style.
They had a preview of this picture, Breakfast at Tiffany's, in San Francisco. And they had one of those conferences afterwards. Didn't go too well, because it was a big hit, but it didn't go too well at this preview. So the producer, Marty Rackin, said, well, I don't know what you guys are going to do, but I'll tell you one thing, that damn song can go. Tee-da-da-dee-da. The bend, my huckleberry friend, Moon River and me.
Moon River as we know it is an American classic. But before Mercer so brilliantly crystallized his thoughts on the subject into the form we now know, there was much agonizing and several earlier abandoned versions, including one which very nearly got settled for. If you recall, the heroine of Breakfast at Tiffany's is a scatterbrain called Holly Golightly. And Mercer, in writing the song for her to sing, very nearly decided to go lightly himself and settle for Holly.
I'm Holly, like I wanna be. Like Holly on a tree back home. Just plain Holly, with no dolly. No mama, no papa, wherever I roam.
One of the might have beens that never was. But once Moon River swept the world, the assignments poured in for the new team. Mercer once told me that when he heard what the next job was to be, his heart sank into his boots. He said he looked at the title page of the script, The Days of Wine and Roses, and he thought, oh no, not another Romberg and Hammerstein type romance with Wiener Schnitzel in old Heidelberg. Then he read it, and it wasn't quite like that. The title, he realised, came from a poem written by an English Victorian bohemian called Ernest Dowson. Dowson was everyone's idea of the romantic poet, dead at 30 from malnutrition. Mercer gave all the credit for the song to Dowson, but he was being too modest. Dowson's Days of Wine and Roses are the days of happy love and youth which soon wither on the vine. Mercer's Days of Wine and Roses are those of lost innocence and the impossibility of ever going back. A door marked nevermore that wasn't there before, as he puts it. The screen version of Ernest Dowson's phrase concerned a young couple whose alcoholism destroys them, which means that the acting is of the highly emotional kind, teetering on the brink of hysteria. The stars were Jack Lemmon and Lee Remick, and it's Lemmon who recalls the moment when he first heard the title song.
We were well into the film, at least halfway, and we still had not heard the theme song that Johnny and Hank Mancini had written. As I remember, we were shooting one very long take, Lee Remick and I, all morning long. It was a very difficult thing. It went three or four pages. I ended up in sobbing and tears and this and that, and I was an emotional mess. I was exhausted. I didn't want to eat lunch. I merely wanted to go back to my dressing room at Warner Brothers and just flake out for the hour before we continued working in the afternoon. But Blake walked up and he said, Jack, come on, we're going to the stage next door. I said, oh God, Blake, I'm exhausted. I can't. Come on. He said, will you please follow me? We walk into the next stage. It is absolutely dark and empty. Nobody is shooting anything there. There are no sets. There is nothing except this enormous empty stage in one work light way over in the corner, and the rest is just total blackness, and beside it an old beat up upright piano, and not a stool, just a little broken backed chair. We walk over. Mr. Mancini sits down. Johnny reaches in his pocket and pulls out this folded piece of paper, and he opens it up, and Blake and Lee and I just stand there. Swear to God, I'm beginning to cry. He started to sing this song, and I have never been through anything like it in my life. I knew.
The days of wine and roses. Laugh and run away, just like a child at play. Through the meadowland, toward a closing door, a door marked nevermore, that wasn't there before. The lonely night discloses just a passing breeze filled with memories of the golden smile that introduced me to the days of wine and roses and you.
The strange thing is that I think that even for people that are musical or are in the business to some extent, when you first hear a piece of music, you do not necessarily make a very keen judgment of it. But when I heard this, I was wiped out. I was gone. And I will never forget the circumstances. It was one of the most thrilling moments that I've ever had in 35 years of being in the business.
The lonely night discloses just a passing breeze of the golden smile that introduced me to the days of wine and roses and
The Days of Wine and Roses won the team of Johnny Mercer and Henry Mancini an Oscar for the second successive year, the first time in the history of the award that this had happened. Mancini and Mercer should have won the Oscar three times running, with Moon River, Days of Wine and Roses, and Charade, the waltz, which shows yet again Mercer's remarkable gift for using a lyric as a metaphor, which is sustained throughout the song. In this case, the metaphor Mercer uses is of love as an act in a variety building.
When we played our charade, we were like children posing, playing at games, acting out names, guessing the parts we played. Oh, what a bill we made. We came on next to closing, best on the bill, lovers until love left the masquerade. Fate seemed to pull the strings. I turned and you were gone. While from the darkened wings the music box played on. Sad little serenade, song of my heart's composing.
but still I always will. Best on the bill, strings I turned and you were gone, while from the darkened wings the music box played on. Sad little serenade, song of my heart's composing, I hear it still, I always will. Best on the
close student of Johnny Mercer's work often notices in these later songs a certain modulation of mood from the sparkle of the earlier years. The lyrics are as dazzling as ever, but the sparkle has changed to a glow which lights up the whole work. And images start to recur which were hard to find in the earlier songs of a younger man. In Charade, Mercer talks of children playing. And it was the door mark Nevermore, symbolising childish innocence, which turned up in Days of Wine and Roses. It might be too far-fetched to suggest that as he grew older, Mercer's thoughts turned back to his own childhood, which he was now lamenting with sweet sentiment. And then again, it might not be too far-fetched after all. In the last major motion picture of his career, Mercer collaborated with Mancini, and here belittled his own contribution. He mentions one song in particular with deep affection, but says in the next breath that maybe it was too obscure. He was wrong, it wasn't too obscure. And again, the images of a child abroad in an ominous adult world.
I don't understand why it wasn't a big hit, because it's a very entertaining. Well, I understand it, but I just don't want to believe it. I think that she and Rock Hudson just did not seem compatible, because the movie is colorful. The color is the best I've ever seen. The old cars alone I'd go to see the movie for. The World War I flying. Fabulous. And it's funny. It's got a lot of funny sequences in it. And I love most of the song. I don't think we had a big song, though. I think we could have used a big song. We had a ballad called Whistling Away the Dog. Well, I think it's a little too obtuse. But I think that if we could have had a big song, we'd have had, maybe had a big picture.
Often I think sad old world is whistling in the dark, just like a child who late from school walks bravely home through the park to keep their spirits soaring and keep the night at bay, never quite knowing which way they are going. They sing shadows away. Often I think poor old heart has given up for good. And that's when I see a brand new face, I glimpse some new neighborhood. So walk me back home, my darling. Tell me dreams really come true, whistling, whistling here in the dark with you.
Whistling in the Dark from Darling Lily, and again the retrospective glimpse of the small child out facing the darkness of a very big world. Mercer's own childhood meant a great deal to him. His family ties meant everything to him. His working friend Fred Astaire has said that sometimes Mercer would go home to Savannah, Georgia to refresh himself, recharge the creative batteries. And it was more than mere sentiment. One subject that Mercer did not like talking about was the business of his family finances. Remember that his teens were shaken by the bankruptcy of his father. Well, in the 1950s, nearly a quarter of a century later, Mercer paid off all his father's creditors to the tune of $300,000, the act of a Southern gentleman, and then forgot to sign the check, the act of a man who enjoyed hanging around with jazz musicians. But the check was signed, the debt was paid, and honour was done. In 1964, the aftermath of the failure of Darling Lily led Mercer into a new partnership and his last Broadway show.
Foxy was another show I wrote with Bobby Dolan, who was one of the most underrated composers that I ever worked with. I don't understand why his songs weren't more popular. But he was very gifted in every phase of show business. He conducted 30 or 40 Broadway shows. He produced the movie White Christmas. He scored 40 big films at Paramount, RKO. He had radio shows he conducted. And then he wrote two or three shows. And we loved Foxy, but Foxy was another short-lived show. It just didn't happen.
It just didn't happen commercially, but artistically, Foxy remains a remarkable piece of work. It was a musical version of Ben Jonson's Volpone, with the action transferred to the Klondike. In the opinion of many, it included some of the finest work Mercer ever did. It also included in the cast one of America's beloved clowns, Burt Lahr, whose performance was good enough to win him the Tony Award.
I never knew Burt too well until this show, but I must say, he endeared me to him. Wonderful, sweet man, courageous man, and a funny man. And I can't sing this song like Bert would sing it. But I got to tell you something about going up to Dawson City where we introduced it before it came here. Bert said, we were getting up to around Ketchikan. And Bert said, well, he said, we're up here in the Eskimo country now. And Bobby said, no, that's, we haven't got that far yet. This is Indians here. These are Indians. He said, no, these are Eskimos. Don't tell me. I know Eskimos. And Bobby said, I'll prove it to you. We'll ask this kid. So there's a little kid there on the dock. And Bobby says, son, are you an Eskimo or an Indian? And the kid says, I'm an Indian. And Bert says, what does he know?
Foxy opened around the same time that Hello Dolly did and was therefore swamped in the rush. Later, there were mutual recriminations regarding the failure of the show. But whoever might have been to blame, there was nothing in Mercer's contribution but skill, affection, and as usual, a much deeper level of emotional candor than you usually find in even the best popular music. This becomes clear in the way the songs interlock by referring to each other. First, let's look at one song from Foxy that did get some record coverage as an independent piece.
If you cannot toss your heart gaily in the ring, love me while the moment lingers. If you cannot cross your heart that I'm everything, try at least to cross your fingers. Talk to me, baby. Tell me lies. Tell me lies
as sweet as apple pie. Whisper, you tremble with a wild desire to light the fire in my eyes. Tell me I'm marvelous, exaggerate, prevaricate if you must. Just talk to me, baby, soft and low. Then if you decide it's really so, swear you'll be mine forever. Otherwise, just talk to me and tell me lies, 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 great, big, great, big lies.
I think that song could eventually get to be well known and become kind of a semi-standard, because it's a nice song and gives you an idea how he could write.
Sinatra's recording of Talk to Me Baby hints at the quality of the songs in Foxy, and it's interesting how Mercer, in his attempt to integrate the score into the story, uses the phrase Talk to Me Baby in another piece in the show, which I think certainly deserves to become a standard, because it's a really wonderful example of how to take the most hackneyed idea in the world and breathe life and poignancy and, yes, art out of it. The corniest theme in the popular music stew is the one about the Cinderella girl whose life and love vanishes at midnight. Every third-rate touring pantomime is fed on the pathos of that situation. It's seemingly so threadbare as to be utterly beyond redemption. But see what Mercer does with it in Foxy. In this recording, he's alone in a room with the composer Robert Dolan at the piano. Mercer is, in a way, is demonstrating the song. We eavesdrop on his version of Cinderella and marvel at its extraordinary tenderness, its emotional intensity, its power for people like us to conjure up an invisible stage and light that stage with all the lamps of modern theatre.
It's all done, Cinderella, and so are you. Good night, sweet prince, and back to the dishes, but no more dreams, Cinderella. They won't come true. Just to think he was there right before my eyes, the dream I had all my youth. He said, talk to me, baby, and tell me lies. But all I said was the truth. Now it's fly, 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 Cinderella. The dance is done. Don't you cry, Cinderella, you had your fun. Gone, gone, footman and carriage, good night, sweet prince, I'm due at my marriage. You won't recall, Cinderella, but if you
just remember, I'll think you're a wonderful fellow. My whole life through.
Johnny Mercer playing the improbable role of Cinderella and using the title phrase of Talk to Me Baby in the verse. Now, Foxy ran only a few weeks and is remembered today for only one rather glum distinction. It's the only Broadway musical which ever opened in the Arctic Circle in Carson City, scene of the original Gold Rush. With the closing of Foxy, Mercer's Broadway career drew to an end. His movie career continued for a while, but slowly petered out in the most incongruous of settings. He went to work for one of the very last of the Monolith Studios, and in so doing, held out his arms to yet another generation of young listeners who could chuckle at his homely jokes without even knowing who he was. The property itself was eccentric to the brink of daftness, an animalized version of Robin Hood.
That was just a job for money. They asked me if I'd do it, and I said, I don't know. You know, it's hard to write for Disney. Disney is like going to another planet. You have to put your water wings on and think in a different way. You try to write for kids, and you try to write in a fantasy world, and he's going to do this thing about Robin Hood. So I went and I saw the picture. I love the guys at Disney. They really are like big kids over there. You know, like they've never grown up in many ways. So the only thing I could think of was an old ribald folk song about the bastard king of England, you know. So I called it the blasted king of England instead of the bastard king of England. Ah, the minstrel sing of an English king a thousand years ago. He ruled the land with an iron hand and his mind was weak and low. What we used to sing as kids. I never knew who wrote that. I don't know if anybody ever published it. It's just in the public domain as far as I know because I've been singing it since I was 3 or 4 years old. So I talked to these guys about it, and I love the idea of Ustinov and Terry Thomas, because they're truly English. You know, and it's about England, it's about Robin Hood, but I couldn't stand the idea of Phil Harris and Pat Buttram and all these hillbilly Americans playing the other parts, and to me it seemed a strange bag. And I didn't think the song was going to mean anything, I didn't think the picture was going to mean anything. As it turned out, I was wrong about the picture. The picture's a big hit. But I was right about the song. The song didn't mean much.
Except to the small children who one day will react to the subtleties of I Remember You and Laura, just as they chuckled at the idea of a comic song about the baddest baddie in the entire genealogy of English kings.
Oh, the world will sing of an English king 1,000 years from now, and not because he passed some laws or had that lofty crown. While Bonnie Good King Richard leads the great crusade he's on, we'll all have to slave away for that good-for-nothing John. Incredible as he is inept, whenever the history books are kept, they'll call him the phony King of England.
Apart from the phony King of England.
He sits alone on a giant throne, pretending he's the king. A little tycoon's rather like a puppet on a string. And he throws an angry tantrum if he cannot have his way. And then he calls for mom while he's sucking his thumb. You see, he doesn't want to play. Too late to be known as John the First. He's sure to be known as John the Worst. A pox on that phony King of England. Lay that country on me, babe. While he taxes us to pieces and he robs us of our bread, King Richard's crown keeps slipping down around that pointed head. Ah, but while there is a merry man in Robin's wily pack, we'll find a way to make him pay and steal our money back. A minute before he knows we're there, old Rob'll snatch his underwear.
the breezy and uneasy king of England. The snivelin', grovelin', measly weasley, blubberin', jabberin', gibberin', jabberin', plunderin', plottin', wheelin', dealin', Prince John, the phony king of England.
After Robin Hood, there was one last adventure to come, a musical for the London stage. The property, The Good Companions, retained a special sentimental attachment for Mercer because it was tied inextricably with his own private life.
I read the book by J.B. Priestley, which I understand was released in 1927. I think I read it about 1929 or 30. It was when it came out in America, and fell in love with it immediately. I gave it to my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and she took it home and showed it to her uncle, and her uncle said, well, anybody who likes that kind of book can't be all bad. You can go out with him.
The Good Companions came about through conversations between Mercer and Andre Previn. At first, the idea was a film musical version of Little Women, but when that fell through, Mercer propositioned with the Priestley idea.
I said, are you serious about still wanting to do a musical? He said, yes, I am. I said, well, there's a book I've been in love with all my life. Called A Good Companion. If it's free, if you can clear it, if we can get the rights to do it, get it. He called me back within a week or two on transatlantic telephone, said that he could get it. It was available. And what should he do? I said, well, you talk to Mr. Priestley and do what he says. If he suggests any scriptwriter, you follow along and get the best deal you can and get an option for a year with another option for the second year, which is what we did. And the first year went by, we were only halfway there, and so we took up the second year's option, and I came over here seriously to write with him. And I've been here for 10 months, and during that time we did the bulk of it.
In a sense, the phrase slipping around the corner is always the great challenge to any musical adapters of The Good Companion. Because in the novel, Priestley names the song and describes its liveliness, its irresistible bubbling effect, at some length. Probably no composer could ever match those descriptions.
Slipping around the corner to the Rose and Crown, the very best in town, the blooming Rose and Crown. Slipping around the corner for a half and half, we'll have ourselves a laugh. And if you care to tickle my fancy while we're in the vestibule, a jolly custom you'll agree. Then off a mo. And in we go. Hello, hello. Who's here we know? Plan your holiday, dearie. Slipping around the corner with me. There's old Harry there at the end. He's brought a friend. Les and Larry, Bertie and Lou, having a few. Should I tarry over me head in the foam? Rescue me, Gov, give me a shove. Point me back home. Slipping around the corner to the local pub, a ruddy country club, I mean the local pub. Doing the Jackie Horner with a bob or three, the treat'll be on me. And if you have to squander me fortune, dearie, with a royal flair, as if the king were there to see. Then off a mo, and off we go, on tippy-toe, to Vododio, peel a bleeding banana. Slipping around the corner, skipping around the corner, nipping around the corner, tipping around the corner, whipping around the corner, zipping around the corner, slipping around the corner with me.
If The Good Companions was a moderate kind of ending to Mercer's stage career, it did contain yet another of those surprises that make a study of the man's life such a joy. One of those quietly philosophic songs. A song of age and maturity rather than youth and optimism. A song which looks life in the face and acknowledges that our time here is limited. It's always later than we think, but perhaps never too late to write the thoughtful song.
the dance of life begins. A thousand violins play softly in our ears. The music of the spheres, the dance of life says now, come hold me in the shadow, we'll find a way somehow to save the wasted years. Our crystal ball on high goes spinning through the sky, each twinkling spot of light uncovers lonely strangers, laughing lovers. Let fortune call the tune, we have our love to gamble on. Turn on our friend the moon. Come dance with me. Come dance with me. Our music ends too soon.
When a man writes lines of that kind, is it surmising too much to say that he knows his own time is getting short? Mercer was seriously ill during the writing of The Book Companions, even if nobody, perhaps not even John himself, knew exactly how ill. This was the time when he was in London for long spells, times when I sat and talked with him about songs and songwriters, times when he gave so generously of his companionship, his knowledge and his friendship. Mercer believed, and I believe with him, that when the fashionable novels and poems and words of wisdom have faded and forgotten, it's the songs that survive to speak to us of other times.
I think that's one of the best indications of the times, is the songs of a country, of a city, of a locality, of a time. I think that Gershwin almost made his time. I think he put his name on 10 years that almost branded those. These are my years, these 10 years, you know. I don't think it's happening that way anymore. I think songs come from everywhere, from individuals. One song here, one song there. I think Sondheim is doing it in a way, but it's mighty quiet imprint he's leaving. I like his songs from A Little Night Music. Well, it's tasteful, but you don't hear anything. Even for the last four or five shows, you don't hear any big song. And we're used to that.
That feeling that the songs of a nation are its true guides to conduct is echoed much more in American life than in our own. In England, the songwriter is just a songwriter, even at that. In America, he is at his best a folk poet, an unselfconscious spokesman for his country, for his generation. That's what Johnny Mercer was, a folk poet. We have, in our time, measured our lives by his words. We've laughed through our youth with Lazy Bones, love the impossible she called Laura, because there's been a Laura in all our young dreams. We have heard I Remember You and nodded because we know that Mercer wrote it for all of us, because somehow he knew. He knew what we were feeling, what we were thinking, above all, what we were dreaming. He was the spokesman for all of us. Mercer was so prolific that we can't be sure what his last song was. But we do know that his last active year was 1975, and this next song was written in that year. So if it wasn't his very last, it was very nearly his last. Yet again, the images of retrospection, of time running short, of something ending. Again, is it too presumptuous of us to assume that in writing this song, words and music, Mercer was rehearsing the songwriter's farewell?
You go your way, I'll go my way, but let's walk a ways together while we may. that share the sunny weather of this bright sunny day. All too soon the road will turn, the pathways will part. All we have to offer is the love in our hearts. So you sing your song, I'll sing my song. We may even share a touch of old anxiety. Then you go your way to your golden doorway and wish me well as
That is a beautiful and sad song. But Mercer was also a man bursting with the high spirits of the active, happy, gifted man. If you go your way is the last word, it's not the only one. Not the word we'll remember. The miraculous thing about him was that he wrote every kind of song, any kind of song, all kinds of songs. He loved his craft and he loved sharing it. And that is the way I will always remember him. When I do remember him, which is more or less all the time, I marvel at the absurd good fortune I had to become a friend of the man who, when I was a teenager, was a remote poet whose words were sung by the whole world. I once asked John what it felt like to be more widely heard than William Shakespeare, and he replied, "Ah, but Shakespeare didn't have Harold Arlen to help him out." John H. Mercer, born Savannah, Georgia, November 18, 1909. Died Beverly Hills, California, June 25th, 1976. Scholar, wit, philosopher, and poet. Flower of his generation.
Our crystal ball on high goes spinning through the sky. Each twinkling spot of light uncovered. Lonely strangers, laughing lovers, immortal or immune, we have our love to gamble on. Let fortune call the tune. Come dance with me. Come dance with me, our music ends too soon.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.